Hi, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio, and it is March 6th, 2024. Thanks so much for being with us today. We got an old friend with us from when we first started the company. Andrew used to come on. Andrew Coulson is here. He's the Chief Data Science Officer over at Mind Education, which produces ST Math, which is, well, I'll let him explain. It's a wonderful program for K-8 math, okay? And he'll talk about it. Besides the fact that it's that, we're not doing an infomercial because he wants to talk about how this works with all groups. It's about equitable engagement, okay, in math. And oddly enough, I just did a show earlier this morning with the Museum of Mathematics in New York, and they're very concerned about equitable mathematics as well, okay? And they're doing a lot of work with minority groups and young women to get them really, really interested in mathematics. So it's important to find the right products out there that work. And by the way, that little boip you hear every so often, for some reason over the last couple of days, I've been getting these bizarre Skype messages that just keep coming in every so often. And every time they come in, they make a boip. Please bear with me. If you hear a boip, don't worry about it. It's me, not you. I'm going to figure out how to get rid of them soon enough. Okay. I want you to go over to aashed.org. Check out what we do for our American Consortium for Equity in Education. Everything we do is over there. It's all free for you. ACE-D.org. Okay. And please check it out. That's where we're going to archive the podcast. That's where all the podcasts are archived, at our home website for the American Consortium for Equity in Education. And now, without further ado, hi, Andrew. Welcome back, buddy.
Larry, long time. We've both been busy, I'm sure.
Yeah, and luckily, neither of us have aged. Am I correct?
It's a long game, so I'm still in it.
Me too, my friend. Me too. Are you out in California today?
I am. I'm speaking to you from sunny Southern California right now. Yep.
Good. Well, I can top that because, as you know, I live in Maine, okay, and it's sunny and in the 50s here today. It's March. Well, let me get this. It's March 6th, okay, and all the snow is gone, okay, and it's sunny and in the 50s, and people say there's no climate change. Hello, right?
We've only got you beat by about 10 degrees here, so good
going.
It's
amazing. it's amazing. So here we are, okay? There'll probably be one more blizzard before it's all done. Okay, your Chief Data Science Officer for Mind Education. I hope I did that right. Neuroscience Education Organization, and you guys produce ST Math. Now, you tell everybody all about that. Go into as much detail as you want on that.
Sure. Well, first off, my shorter title is Data Guy, and I oversee all of the data and evaluation.
I think that's an animated feature on Fox, isn't it, Data Guy?
I think it might be a hit, yeah, nowadays.
Yeah, you never know.
So I get to oversee all of our research, and that's what's informing me for the subject of today's talk. In a nutshell, so some neuroscientists came on an idea that all of us are hardwired to do visual pattern manipulation, and that's in all of our brains, and what could they do with that? And they came up with a little baby math program because too many kids were getting lost in some of the complexities of math as early as the first time they hit fractions or whatever. So we've fleshed that out now to a full curriculum available in schools, grades K through 6, and then some intervention at 7 and 8. And all of the math is, I don't want to say reduced to, but I do want to say introduced as visual puzzles with video game mechanics. And so we've done a lot of research on how does that do for engagement and equitable engagement even, and also looking at that high stakes stuff, like does it move the state test needle? So I'll stop there.
That's good. It's good stuff. And by the way, I don't know if you've ever been there. Have you ever been to this Museum of Mathematics in New York?
Oh, it's next on my list when I'm in Manhattan, man.
No, I'm saying I just did a show or just an hour ago with Cindy Lawrence, who's their executive director. She's great. And we were talking, you know about this, okay? We were talking about the puzzle piece called the Einstein, the tiling piece. Are you familiar with that?
Oh, I have to go to the museum. I'm not even.
There you go. I'm telling you, she gave the best explanation of all this I ever heard. Talk about visual and mathematics. It's all about that. That's momath.org. You're at stmath.com, but it's also mindresearch.org. And you guys do more than just the math, but you do the math. K8, am I good on that? Is that where we are?
Thanks. You're good. And the museum just kind of reminds me of how when kids go into a museum little kids, they're able to get hands-on with exhibits, right? Like, call that, concrete manipulatives and moving things around, or at least touching buttons and watching things move around. And that concreteness, the kids can kind of see what's happening, and we're leveraging that same kind of thing, but on a computer screen for all this math K-6.
Yeah, it's good. I'm telling everybody, it's good stuff, and it's always been good stuff with you folks. Talk about, this is what really struck me when we were planning the show, is the equitable engagement part, and this is really important. ST Math, and again, it sounds like an infomercial. I don't mean it to be, but you have a great product, so we can just go with that, okay? But you guys have shown improvement across all the subgroups. And data guy, tell me, what are the subgroups and how it's working across the board? And that's key stuff, because it has to work, and this is really actually funny. We want people to be engaged with math, okay? And if they're anything like me, they're turned off by it, all right?
Right.
And because it was taught poorly to me. That's was taught out of – I said this to Cindy a few minutes ago. It was taught poorly. It was taught out of context. It was taught with no goal in mind except just to understand this for no reason whatsoever, okay? And kids today are even nuttier than I was, okay, back 12 million years ago when I was living in a cave. Okay. And, just talk about this and how this whole idea of it's working equitably across the board. I think that's really important. Go ahead. Go for it.
Yeah.
Go for it, data guy.
You got it. Well, I'm going to channel our neuroscientist founders for a minute and say, again, they were studying how everybody's brain works, not little Larry's brain was different. Everybody's brain works this way. And so
but everybody else. Okay.
I'm going to give you.
If they did it for little Larry, they wouldn't have made any money whatsoever. Okay. they'd be working in a coal mine in Pennsylvania right now. So. Good thing they didn't do little Larry, but please continue. Yeah.
So we're starting with all people are math people, and even little Larry was a math person. And it wasn't that the teachers didn't do something right, I guess. Our way we look at it is that there were some parts of the math learning environment then and even now that were missing, and a lot of kids who were math people, but without a couple of missing ingredients. That eventually fell off the tracks. I mean, you can only memorize so much meaningless abstract stuff that you can't see and understand, right?
Right.
So you're a math person, Larry, actually. And as you mentioned, looking for how does all sorts of different student groups respond to when you bring those extra ingredients on the field. So we've had the pleasure of moving up from the first time we talked, I think I was talking to you about a single school study, and now we're up into like the tens of thousands in study groups. And the great thing about that is you get to unpack that into, well, how did this subset, how did this group and that group of students do? So I'll just give you an example of a big study that we did just showing on state tests what I call the equitable impact. And we can talk about engagement and productive engagement and access, but here on the impact side. So for the overall students, if we're comparing similar students who did and didn't do ST math to a reasonable level, like half the curriculum that year. So overall, for all students, the non-ST math was 66.8 and the ST math was 75.3. So about 8 points in a bit. So just kind of keep that in mind. And I'm going to say a couple of subgroups. So for the English learners, that was 64%, and this is meeting standards, 64% without STMAP and 76% with STMAP. So we saw a good jump for the English learner subgroup, mm-hmm. and this is about the equitability. Like, well, what are the different subgroups do?
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead. If you got a comment,
no,
go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I'm agreeing with you because the ESL, there's so many kids now, 30% or so certainly of our students are ESL kids. I believe it's some number like that. Okay, and they are everywhere. They're not just along the border in the California and Texas and Arizona. Okay, they're everywhere. Well, you can go to Northern Iowa, and the kids are there. And we got to have ways to teach them. Okay, not every. You know where I'm going. Yeah,
I do. And districts sometimes will tell you how many are the second how many languages are spoken, and it's like dozens. It's like mind blowing, right?
Yeah.
Which is
unbelievable.
Which is great, but that's a big number. Anyway, so the next group I'm going to tell you about is the group flagged as special education, right? And so they're going to be lower performing on the math assessments overall. And so in this case, it's 36.8% meeting standards without STMAP that year in the study, and 47.3%. with STMath. So again, a big jump for these
That's
students who are at the lower end of the performance spectrum. And we can talk about why a little later. And I'll finish off with one more subgroup that maybe doesn't get talked about a whole lot. This time I'm going to talk about the little gifted and talented kids.
I was hoping you were going to say that. Yeah, which is very important.
And I'll point out in that 30% of kids who aren't English fluent, you know, who are English learners, a lot of gifted and talented, you know, little kiddos in there, right? So let's not neglect unpacking the gifted and talented. This time we're looking at a higher bar, percent mastering, okay, the standards, because they were at 76.7% mastering the standards.
Yeah.
Without STMath, and here is the point about equitable impact. Even those kids who would probably test out of taking almost any kind of supplemental, right? Like they can get it. They know the procedures. They've memorized it. Even if it was meaningless, you know, they know to get the right answer for the teacher and all that. So, you know, why even supplement? But with this supplement of these missing ingredients that help even a gifted and talented kid to understand better, that 76.7 jumped to 85.6% mastery. So there was headroom for all the students to improve.
That's really something. And I want to ask you something about math education. Does STMath, mm-hmm. and I, by the way, I am about as far from being a math teacher as you could possibly be. Okay, I'm like the edge of the universe
like
and the Hubble telescope. Okay, all right, I get into the quark at the end of the universe. Okay, that's how far I am from being a math teacher. But does STMath work with other programs? Okay, in other words, if a school is using the XYZ program for teaching math, okay, is it supplemental? This sounds more professional. Is it supplemental? Or is it in and of itself the best way to do it all by itself? ST.
Gotcha. So it's not an all by itself. It is complementary to any kind of Monday through Friday regular, you know, textbook or basal curriculum. I'm going to say a word about supplemental, which is the implication is that's only for where the conventional learning kind of didn't work. Like little Larry needed to be supplemented, right?
Yes, but yes, he did. Unfortunately, you're 60 years too late, but that's okay. So thank you. Yeah.
But little average kids who got the average learning on the instruction, you know, test didn't need to be supplemented. So supplemented is like for some kids on some math when the conventional stuff didn't work. And what we're talking about with these missing ingredients in STMath is this is you could call it complementary, but it's a full curriculum, and I like to call it a parallel digital curriculum that, you know, even for the math that the gifted and talented kids were, you know, pretty good at, they still with this supplement, so let's call it with this parallel curriculum, they still get extra added points.
Okay. So now, I know this is radio. This is going to be even harder to do. Can you kind of give a picture? And I know people can go to the website, okay, smath.com, et cetera, much easier than this. But just give me a picture of what you're actually doing with this. Okay, you say visual. What does that mean? Is it like putting together a puzzle?
All right. Exactly right.
Go ahead.
I mean, just literally.
Describe it. There you go. There you go, Dr. Yeah. Doom. Try to do that one. Yeah.
Now the data guy is going to describe this. But, yes, you can go to stmath.com I think it's /play. But so imagine we're doing addition and subtraction. And you might even imagine that in the real world, you could have physical manipulatives, little plastic blocks, and like maybe linking cubes and clicking together into three, and then maybe one color is going to be subtracted and you pull the red ones out of your link and whatever. So, but then imagine that on the screen, and I'm thinking of a game where there's 250 different types of games that we have. This is not just one game all the time for the whole year. But one of them has a little bulldozer, and then it's got some little rectangular shaped holes or ditches in the ground, and then a pile of green square blocks piled up in front of the blade. And you're supposed to make a perfectly level surface by having the right number of little green squares in front of the bulldozer that will just fill up the various holes as the bulldozer pushes them across the screen. And when it does, they drop down into the holes. And if you get it right, the bulldozer and then our little penguin mascot can walk across the flat road all the way across the screen. But if you pick it wrong, and this is super important, it gives you feedback just like any video game does, like, oh, you didn't pick enough. There's still a hole. The bulldozer and the penguin can't cross. Or you pick too many and there's a pile up at the end. So if you can see that picture in your mind's eye, it's like a way to have addition and subtraction, because we can say at the end you wanted it to be four high and you only got three high and you lost three in the holes along the way. So how many should you have had? So if that helps to paint a picture, and the student gets as many attempts as they want on that, and every time they can see, oh, I picked too many. And this sense making, we don't even have any instructions for that game at all. In fact, kids won't read or listen to instructions anyhow.
Yeah.
And they're non-routine. This is not like the teacher has to or has put this up on the screen and says, hey, kiddies, here's a bulldozer. These holes mean this, and et cetera. The kids discover all that. They believe that video games is something that all of them can do. They'll spend even 10 attempts to get it. They self-pace. That's one of the super important ingredients. And they have to master it with a score of 100 on maybe 8 different puzzles to get to the next more difficult one, which actually they like it to be more difficult if it's scaffolded up gradually.
Of course. And let me ask, this is how bad I am in math, okay? I get that teaches you maybe addition and subtraction, but what? This is my ignorant mind. Okay, where are we going with this? What is the ultimate goal? And I have to, is the ultimate goal just to think logically? Is the ultimate goal to move them towards algebra? In other words, how does the little bulldozer? Just let's start there. Make them understand math. I mean, I get the 1, 2, 3. Help me out, Andrew. And I'm being serious when I say that. What's the goal? And is that a bad question or is that a good question?
So I'm getting that little Larry probably was okay with adding and subtracting single digit
right.
numbers.
Right, Larry could do that. Okay, he could do that.
But perhaps when you were adding fractions and the number on the bottom of that horizontal line thingy-me-jiggy that could sometimes be diagonal and sometimes it could be horizontal and sometimes it could be a hyphen with a dot above and below somehow and maybe colons entered into it a little later, and it's all confusing with all these abstract things. But really it was adding fractions. And why was it that when the number in the bottom, which has a super fancy four-syllable math vocabulary word that nobody ever hears except for a math class called, do you remember? Denominator.
No. Denominator. Thank you.
So
I know another big word, delicatessen.
Nice. That sounds a lot more delicious than denominator.
Denominator's good.
So how come it made a difference whether that denominator was the same number in both of those fractions or different? And what did we have to do when they were different so that we could add the darn fractions?
Okay.
And now that's a lot more complex than the bulldozer and the holes. And there's formulaic ways to do that, like I don't want to get into it, but just little numbers whizzing around that you try to sort of remember this formula. Or, and what we're giving them is, all the math should make sense. That's part of the answer to your bigger question.
Thank you.
Why is that?
That is a great answer. Yeah, it has to make – that's what – that actually, you just nailed it. It never made sense to me.
I didn't know where I was going.
And I always put myself – when I do these math shows – I always put myself into that, okay? It never made sense to me. Why am I doing this, and what the hell is it that I'm doing? I could do it, but I didn't have any idea why I was doing it.
Yeah,
okay?
and eventually
I didn't care. Yeah.
Well, and because eventually it was the end of week 7, and whether or not it made sense to little Larry, it was time to move on to the next topic, right?
And they didn't care if Larry learned the first topic, yeah.
Well, and math is like the Burj Khalifa or something. It's like this enormous building that you're building one floor at a time. And it's got even more floors than that crazy high skyscraper. And every floor had better be solid because with math, you keep at it for so long. There's going to be hundreds of floors on top of that floor. And if you have a weak adding fractions floor, then about 50 or 60 floors above it, that weak adding fractions floor is going to make you more and more wobbly, right? So this is one of the really important things about math learning and instruction, and something that, like in the story of little Larry, can be missing is you got to find some way for the kids to make sense of, and then I want a better word than mastery, but to master that adding fractions with unlike denominators. And they need to self-pace, and like you got to find some way not to move them on before they've built a solid floor there, if you're going to put hundreds of floors on top of it, which you are.
Yeah, and I want to ask something, and this is also important, because this is a lot of what you do, is the visual aspect, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And why is math, and it was, by the way, I guess it was never taught to me, and here I am complaining again, it was never taught as a visual, okay,
mm-hmm.
and so to speak. Okay, but as I talk to people like Cindy over at MoMath, like you, the visual is extremely important. We relate, and I think most people do relate, obviously, mathematics and visuals. Okay, and you can go write down a list on that. And talk to me about the science behind the visual aspect of it. What is it that makes math, visual so important to understanding math? And I think it really is. It's so darn important. Am I right? I'm right, aren't I? Yeah.
Yes. So one of our co-founders and I, in a recent internal deck we put together, we're just reminding ourselves that mathematics is the ST is a fancy pants chief data science officer word for visual, spatial temporal. So math is spatial temporal. And what that means is thinking of things in visual patterns and manipulating them, or seeing those patterns change and solving by manipulating them over time. I'm going to tell a story on little Andrew for you, because I fell off the math bandwagon.
I just was a little bit
older than you. And what happened was, this sounds like a humble brag almost, but in graduate school physics, I finally got lost in the thicket of equations where, in those textbooks, it's like more than half of it is just abstract scribbles of hieroglyphics on the page, right? And my co-founder didn't get lost at that level. He's a PhD in string theory physics. But he said, Andrew, what you got lost in the abstractions that didn't make sense to you. You needed to think of it as conceptual visual chunks and then see those being manipulated, and you got kind of lost in the leaves and lost sight of the forest. All the math can be presented as visual as you get to higher and higher math, whether it's adding fractions or whatever I got stuck in. it still can be presented as visual. And here's the other way to think about it. And this is as weird as saying, hey, you and I are breathing nitrogen right now. Did you know that? And we're like, no, we never think about it. We never think about math just being infused and presented with abstract language all the time, right? But we're saying that has its risks. Like, I fell off that bandwagon with all of that language stuff. And at the conceptual level, you can introduce it without all of the abstractions. Later, you need to own that. But the problem is we give people like the high-power abstractions, little learners, immediately instead of leave that for later. We need to know all that stuff, but start out with the bulldozer and the squares. Later, tell them words like denominator.
Wow. And you got to learn the basics before you move up. I mean, it's really, really fascinating. And I want to ask you this as we wind down here, okay? Where do you see the future of math education going, Andrew? You've been with ST for what? How long? 12, 15 years? How long?
Over 20 years.
Okay, over 20. All right. So you started off with one thing. It evolves. And where is it evolving to? Where do you see it going? Math education and math.
So yeah. One of the trends that I see is the educator practitioners at the high level, say state level and more district level, are requiring that providers of math programs be held accountable for results. So those numbers I was reading off to you before,
right,
there was a state that said, hey, tell us if your program is working. And that's a super healthy thing. And the more that can happen, there's a thing for another podcast called Outcomes-Based Contracts that's about that, which is sort of show the kids learn, and then that's, you get paid for that, right? So I'm working hard to catalyze or spark a continuous improvement cycle in math education where if you turn the lights on, do my chief data science guy, look at usage, look at serious usage, see how much does it move needles, does it work for all the student subgroups, and the users, the educators are looking at that too, and then they start making comparisons and seeing which programs work best for them, and it will ignite a race towards higher and higher learning because we're turning on the lights to measure it. So that's one thing, because no matter how excellent we might be able to make ST Math, every program is going to need to raise its game, if you will, in order for us to move that NAEP needle and to get all the little Larrys to know that they're math people. So that's one thing. The other thing is there's a lot of research, a lot of research going on, and we're part of research sharing the wealth, if you will. So we just got a big foundation grant to be part of a cohort that's looking to, and we're not the only program, looking to measure and then increase equitable engagement and motivation in math. And over time, we're all of us programs, we're going to share the wealth of what makes ST Math so engaging. And then we're going to increase the knowledge base so that all providers and all of the consumers, if you will, the educators, can start to like see what is it that needs to get done. We're even going to start adding to the science of learning math, kind of like there's a science of reading.
Reading, yeah, exactly.
So it's elevating knowledge and like those missing ingredients, which again, maybe for another podcast, but we want everybody to see these are so efficacious. Like, look at what happens for the special ed students, and they get the talent, and et cetera. And you know, we think that everybody ought to be getting those effective math learning environments. So I think in the next 5 years, the field is going to learn a lot more about the important components, so that little Larrys are a thing of the past.
Let's hope there's not too many little Larrys out there. The last question I have, just today off the top of your head, anecdotally maybe, on a scale, I'm going to make this up, of 1 to 10, where are we with math education and math engagement? Are we good? Are we at 75% or are we at 40%? 75 or 40? Where do you think we are?
Yeah. So I think we're more at like 40, and it's not like it's rocket science to improve that, but things like just not allowing students to get that mastery level before you move them on and kind of just breaking through that type of barrier. Like, I'm not going to give above a 5 out of 10 score until every kid is at least has a good chance of building a solid floor as they build their way up the skyscraper.
Yeah, it's good stuff, Andrew. I got to tell you, I always love talking to you. Like you said, it's been too damn long. Okay, we'll get more stuff together. Okay, I promise. All right?
Great.
Thank you, buddy. This is great. I enjoyed it. Thank you. I love your insights.
My pleasure.
Well, mine too. Okay, you take care. We'll talk soon. Okay?
All right. Talk soon, Larry. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks, buddy. Bye, Andrew. And that, everybody, was Andrew Coulson. By the way, you heard all those beeps and boops. Okay? Boops. Okay? I'm working this thing out of here today. Okay? That was Andrew Coulson, who's the chief data guy, the science guy, the data guy over at ST Math, Mind Education. I'll give you the two. It's mindresearch.org, stmath.com. Check it all out. It's good. And it is good stuff. I've been knowing them for a long, long time. And they are good people. We're going to archive over at ace-ed.org. Check it all out. Everything's free over there. I'm Larry Jacobs. Thank you for listening.